Welcome back to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. It's RotoWire's fantasy hockey show, folks. I'm Paul Bruno, coming to you from just north of Toronto in Canada. And you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJ Scholes 24, based in another hockey mad area in the States, specifically Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, that's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. And we were busy at both ends of this connection, AJ, with all the trades that went down last week. And we're going to spend the bulk of this show doing something that I haven't heard any other network or program do, and that's tell our listeners where the newly acquired players are playing and the implications to the teams that lose those players and the draft compensation that they got, specifically with conditions attached in a lot of cases. So let's jump right in, partner, and go through the first of these trades that took place March the 5th, 2024, last week. And that's where Washington acquired a 2024 second rounder and a fourth rounder from 2026 from Vegas in exchange for Anthony Mantha. And there was $2,850,000 retained by Washington in this deal, allowing the Caps to get both of those picks. I think Anthony Mantha is going to be a great fit on this team. I think he's going to fit in on the second line for Vegas, and they have a number of injured players too, so they're going to count on him for some primary scoring in the top six, and I think he's well suited for that, AJ.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the interesting question becomes, you know, how does he fit in come the postseason? Where does he land? You'll have theoretically Mark Stone will be back. William Carrier will return as well, I believe, this season, plus another center that we'll talk about later in Tomas Hertl. But so I think, yes, top six role, but I would say that's probably a for now situation. He's also more with the second unit instead of the first in terms of power play minutes. And they rely pretty heavily on the first unit. I mean, you look at from their last game, the first five guys all over 3 minutes in power play ice time, whereas the other five guys all, you know, around 30 seconds. So being on the second unit is not a huge boost in Vegas unless they get a ton of penalties. And I think any position he's on is temporary at best once you add in Carrier, Hurdle, and Stone, possibly dropping Mantha to a third line role.
And of course, we're looking at this for the balance of this season, but there's an intrigue from my perspective that you know, is this guy going to be a rental only, and will he be a free agent in the offseason, or will Vegas try and retain him? I suppose that'll be based on how he produces for this team. So he has every incentive, if he wants to stay part of this winning formula, to do the best that he can down the stretch. And hey, if it doesn't work out there, he should be able to position himself with the grand stage that they've offered him to showcase his skills to the rest of the league and sign up for a big deal in the offseason. Similarly, in the next deal, the Florida Panthers joined the arms race in the Eastern Conference. They're the top team in the East, and they're starting to pull away from the Bruins, I think, a little bit. It doesn't show in the standings, but certainly in the last 10 games, they are playing very, very well. And they added to their wealth up front by picking up Vladimir Tarasenko, with the Ottawa Senators retaining 50% of his salary. That amounts to $2.5 million. He's going to wind up playing first line minutes on the left side of that team in the time being. And Ottawa, in exchange for that large asset, acquires a fourth round pick from Florida. That's conditional. And a 2025 third round pick from Florida. The conditions state that the upgrade to the 2026 third rounder, if Florida wins the Stanley Cup in this current upcoming playoff round. So Tarasenko's hit the ground running here. He's already had a good game for the Panthers. AJ, do you think he can continue that, or will he continue kind of what I thought was a bit of an underwhelming season to date?
I think we're going to see more. Now, I don't think he's going to go out and put up 3 points every night, but I think that's going to be more the trend that we're going to see out of him. You know, he's playing with a better assignment with Barkov and Reinhart. Doesn't have to be leaned on necessarily as much when you consider they've got a Tkachuk, Bennett, Verhaeghe second line. So I think this is a good spot for him. It's a good opportunity. You know, again, power play. Right now he's kind of the focal point, I will say, of the second unit, but could push for more opportunities there as well. So I think it's a good spot for Tarasenko to be. I think we'll see more production out of him. You look at his numbers right now, he's right at 41 points. Certainly not going to be the 82-point guy was in his last full season with the Blues, but I think 50 is not out of the question, maybe even 55, depending on how the last couple of games go here.
AJ, the next deal was featuring Colorado Avalanche acquiring a depth defenseman. There were a few of them on the trade block in the weeks before the trade deadline day, but Sean Walker was certainly a guy whose name was bandied about for a week or two, and I thought maybe he was in line to come to Toronto with some of the talk that I was hearing locally, but Colorado snagged him. He's going to wind up playing third pairing defense minutes there, and he's going to wind up doing some PK work for them too, because he's got some acumen on the defensive side of the puck as a shot blocker. And they also received a 2026 fifth round pick from Philadelphia. The Flyers acquired Ryan Johansson, a 2025 first round pick from Colorado. That's conditional. And the condition is that it's top 10 protected in this instance. And Ryan Johansson, for his part, was immediately transferred to the minors. And there seems to be some belief that he was never a target for the Flyers and they weren't going to have anything to do with him on his roster. He crossed swords with their coaching staff in the past. And I think that might have been a factor in relegating him. Also, the agent that he has is the same agent that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, a draft pick from the Flyers who refused to play for them. It's the same agent involved in this case. So Ryan Johansson, even though he was part of this transaction, was never really a factor that the Flyers were going to consider in terms of the actual acquisition. And he'll be plying his trade elsewhere next year for sure. I don't know if it's going to be in the NHL though. And that's something that we can knock around a little bit for a guy who was formerly a pretty well-regarded player earlier in his career. But Sean Walker, very solid defenseman, a nice pickup for Colorado.
What's interesting about the Johansson thing is he's under contract next season as well. So, they're not paying the full freight of his contract with him, in the minors, but they've got still counts about 2.8 against their cap while he's in the minors. And that's on top of Cal Pettersson also being in the minors. So you're talking about $6.7 million in cap space that's being spent in the minors right now for the Flyers. Doesn't seem like necessarily the best idea. So you'll have to see if they try and trade him again during the summer or what else they might try and do here. I mean, they've got some contracts that are, Nick Seeler's deal he's got an extension that kicks in next season. Samuel Erson has an extension kicking in. Owen Tippett gets a big jump from $1.5 million this year to $6.2 million. So they've got some financial commitments heading into next season. And I know the cap is going up. It's going to be our biggest increase in quite a while. But to have, that much money sitting there for guys playing in the minors seems like a lot to me.
AJ, the next deal that came up was a three-way trade. It was actually the first real hockey trade of the day that we saw. And there aren't very many of these where teams trade from their positions of strength to fill a hole elsewhere. And there's really no real other implications. This was player for player, Buffalo acquiring Bowen Byram, an up-and-coming defenseman. I was surprised that Colorado let him go, but his contract, $3.85 million, is on the books for next year, and he'll be an RFA. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they let him go, because they acquired Casey Mittelstadt, who answers their issue at center, for cheaper at $2.5 million. He's an RFA at the end of this season, so there will be a contract issue to deal with there. But I think maybe Colorado was looking at this to shore up a position that's been a bit of a moving target for them for the past couple of years, I'll say.
Well, especially the fact that they were able to bring in, Sean Walker. So they really, in terms of, defensive capabilities, didn't really lose a ton here. Walker's a couple years older, so that's certainly a factor here. But they bring in one of the top defensemen on the market, trade away, again, as you said, from a position of strength. They have Devin Taves, they have Cale Makar, Samuel Girard, really good defensive group. But the middle has been especially lacking for them. So I think it's a solid move. It'll be interesting to see how Casey Mittelstadt meshes there. We've got him projected for a second line role with Jonathan Drouin and Brandon Duhaim. Some of that depends on when Atari Lekkonen and or Zach Parise and or Gabriel Landeskog were to come back in the lineup. So there's some moving parts there as well. But I think overall, to be able to bring in Walker, trade out Byram, really not losing anything in the grand scheme of things for this season, and then to upgrade the middle of their lineup. I love these moves in tandem by the Colorado Avalanche.
And the next move that came up, AJ, was a more complicated deal, a three-way pack between Anaheim, Edmonton, and Tampa. Edmonton really the ones that were driving this because they wanted to shore up their center ice situation and their forward complement, in fact, with the bottom
center. Yeah, they have such a bad group of centers before this trade. They really needed to change and upgrade their centers here, right?
Well, they wanted to shore it up on the bottom six, and that's what the look that they got now. When you consider that they acquired Sam Carrick from Anaheim, he's going to play the fourth line role. There was $425,000 retained on his deal, and they got a seventh round pick as well from Anaheim. And then from Tampa, they got Adam Henrique, who was a name that was thrown around in trade rumors in advance of the deadline. And he, with $1.456 million retained in his case, Ty Taylor, a goalie from Tampa as well, for Tampa as well. He's playing in the AHL. He was a seventh round pick in 2018. They have his signing rights as well. In going out the door from Edmonton, they send a first rounder to Anaheim in 2024, a 2025 fifth rounder. That's conditional. That condition upgrades to a fourth if Edmonton wins the Stanley Cup this year. And then Tampa gets from Anaheim. They got a 2025 fourth round pick. It's conditional. And if Edmonton wins the Cup, the pick will change to 2026 fourth rounder for Edmonton. And they also are going to see the 2.9 million absorbed by Tampa in this case for the deal to send Henrique over to Edmonton. So a good bit of business for the Oilers. And we saw a few of these deals, AJ, where a third party was in there involved to broker the deal by taking on some salary for draft compensation.
Yeah, I don't think that was the most surprising part necessarily, that a third team came in to take some of Adam Henrique's contract, really the move from Anaheim to Edmonton. I think what was surprising was that it was the Lightning. Usually right. You think of non-contender teams picking up this, you know, this extra salary. And so it was definitely a bit of a surprise to see the Lightning get involved here, but they got a pick. You know, I think maybe they're trying to plan for the future, right? And not have to fully rebuild. So they had the space, they picked up an extra, early-ish mid-round pick. But yeah, for Edmonton, I think it's interesting that Sam Carrick was scratched last night, despite them having just brought him in. But they've got like their fourth line right now. You've got Corey Perry in there, Derek Ryan, Matthias Janmark, Sam Carrick. Like there's a lot of moving kind of veteran parts in there. So I'm not totally surprised that Carrick got sat last night. But also on the flip side, it's like you just brought this guy in. But I like a third line of Adam Henrique at center, Vander Kane on the left-hand side. But obviously they can do other things. You know, Nugent Hopkins can move to the middle and Draisaitl can go to the wing. Draisaitl can play the middle. So they've got a lot of flexibility in Edmonton. I think this only adds to that by bringing in Adam Henrique.
And one aspect to note, AJ, when teams are retaining money, they can only take on three of these situations at a maximum. So it's no wonder that it's not just the bottom feeders that will take on these salary, but sometimes another team, a surprising element, as you noticed, Tampa has not retained in other circumstances. So they have a couple of slots where they can do this. And so you can't just keep going to the Anaheims and Arizonas of the world and saying, hey, please take on some salary for us. You might have to look elsewhere once they fill out that third slot. Next deal that came up, another center on the move, Alexander Wenberg goes to the Rangers. They lost Philip Hedel for the season, and they've had a bit of a hole in the center position until now. And Alex Wenberg will fill that role. $2.25 million retained by Seattle. That's half of his cap hit. Seattle, for that transaction, acquires a 2024 second rounder from the Rangers and a 2025 fourth rounder from Dallas. It's a conditional pick. The condition follows a previous trade. and relates to Nils Lundqvist, who wasn't a part of this deal. But this defenseman, if he earns 55 cumulative points over last year and this year's regular season, the pick upgrades to a Dallas 2025 third-round pick. So that's quite an interesting condition there. But I like what the Rangers did here, a tidy bit of business to shore up their center position. This is one of the top teams in the league addressing maybe their biggest need heading into the trade deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. Was wild that this condition carries over with that pick. I think that was the most surprising condition of the day, you know, trying to figure out. It's like, wait, what are we talking about here? Where does this? I think it's just on that pick. It's just tied to that, but there's no chance that that's happening. He's at 31 right now. Getting to 55 is way too, too long to go here. So I won't be worried about that condition, but the Wennberg addition is a decent one. I think there's another move that they made. We'll break it down a little bit more, but getting Jack Roslovic in, I think probably will have more overall impact on the lineup, but Wennberg, perfectly capable third line center. He's got an assist with them already, seeing power play time. In fact, that assist came with the power play. So it's not a bad move, but I don't think it was the most impactful move that the New York Rangers made on the deadline.
And we had another eyebrow-raising transaction by Vegas that came up next in part of a three-way deal. They acquired Noah Hanifin, who was going to be immediately put in their top pairing with Alex Pietrangelo. He played left side of that, one of the best-looking pairings in at the top of any team's defense complement. So a great addition there. And going out the door, Calgary Flames acquire Daniil Mirimanov. He figures to be on the third pairing for their defense, a young up-and-coming blue liner. They get a conditional first-round pick in 2025 and a conditional third-round pick in 2025 for retaining 50% of Hanifin's contract. Philadelphia Flyers get a fifth-round pick for being the broker, the fifth-round pick via the Golden Knights in 2024 for retaining an additional 25% of Hanifin's contract. So 75% of his deal is picked up by other teams so that Vegas can fit him in on their roster. A very nice move by the Knights in this instance.
Yeah, I think a huge upgrade. I got to be honest, Paul, my head was spinning across deadline day, just trying to figure out, like, how are they making who's going where on what IR? And so it's tough. But that aspect of it aside, I think a solid pickup for them, especially, you know, it was, I think, just that day that Alec Martinez had a lower body procedure that they said out of the lineup short term, not super helpful there. But so you're losing Martinez, bringing in Hanifin is definitely going to help with that. I like it from Calgary. The draft pieces they got here were solid. I think they'll definitely like having Mirimanov on this roster. Not a huge offensive guy, but he'll get way more play time than he did in Vegas. So I think you give him a look. You've got Braden Paschal, Oliver Shillington is back, Joel Hanley. They've got a really nice kind of young core behind, you know, Mackenzie Weegar. And I like the move for Calgary here as well.
Definitely. They're trying to build their prospect pool, and they made a very nice little move here that may pay dividends down the road. Up next, the Toronto Maple Leafs acquired Joel Edmondson. He moves into the third pairing on defense on the left side and will be a fixture on the team's shorthanded PK situation, which has been a bit of a problem in the last few weeks. So they're hoping he shores it up. He's a big body, 6'5", 220, and we know that Brad Treliving likes him big. And that was just the tip of the iceberg there in that regard. But Washington Capitals acquire a third-round pick in 2024 and a fifth-round pick in 2025 in exchange for retaining 50% of Edmondson's contract. I like this move for the Maple Leafs. I got a close look at this guy when they faced Montreal in that awful series that went seven games when the Leafs were winning 3-1. One of the interesting aspects for me was how Edmondson patrolled the slot area in front of his net and really made it a minefield for the Maple Leafs. I'm hoping now that he does that on their behalf.
I think the interesting kind of aspect of this, when they made the move, it felt like something's up here. It didn't seem like a necessary move at the time. But now we know that Mark Giordano is on long-term IR.
Yeah.
And it makes a little more sense then. They obviously have Connor Timmins like slowly working his way back in. They previously brought in Ilya Lyubushkin, or brought back rather Lyubushkin. So they made some changes to this blue line. I do like the addition, but it struck me as soon as I saw it, I was like, something's up. And we knew Giordano was hurt at the time, and that he was on IR, but it definitely doesn't feel like a short-term absence in light of this move to go out and get Edmondson.
Yeah, and for weeks in advance of the deadline, I kept hearing that how this was not Brad Treliving's idea of a defense corps. What the Leafs had in his view was a little bit soft, and so he's addressed that with two rugged additions that I like at the bottom of the depth chart here. So we'll see how it plays out in the postseason, where they're going to be necessary to keep the front of the Leafs net clear of intruders. The next deal was Nashville Predators acquiring a left winger for their second line. That's Anthony Beauvillier from the Chicago Blackhawks. The Hawks acquiring a fifth round pick. This is a cheap trade for Nashville, I think. If they wanted to shore their top six, they only had to pay a bottom end draft pick. So I like the move from that perspective. I'm surprised that he didn't fetch a little bit more, AJ. That's my reaction to this particular deal. Do you agree or disagree?
I'm not surprised that he didn't fetch more, just because his numbers this year have been pretty bad. All things considered, you know, just 8 points in 22 games with Vancouver, just 6 points in 23 games with Chicago, obviously bouncing around a ton. I was not shocked by this move. I think this is a great addition, low-cost addition for a team that at one point a lot of people had as sellers. You know, UC Saros's name was linked to being traded away, but they're in a wild card spot pretty firmly. They got about a 9-point gap on the Blues for a wild card spot. I don't know that they'll jump up into the top three in the Central. That's probably a too big of a hill to climb. But so you're not supposed to be a playoff team. You kind of go on this run. They're 8-0-2. Why not? Why not take a flyer on a guy whose, you know, production has been down? It's not going to cost you much. And it's not the only addition in this category that I would put for Nashville. One of them, too, they claimed Jared Anderson Dolan off waivers, brought him over from Los Angeles. So he'll get a look as a center depth piece. Another guy, not a ton of production lately, but when you're not supposed to be in the playoffs anyway, why not? Take the swing. I like both those moves.
Then there was a minor league trade between Montreal and Anaheim. I'll just mention the names and move on to the next trade. But yeah, Jacob Perreault goes to Montreal and Jan Mizak goes to Anaheim. These were forwards who played in the minors this year, and their scoring totals are virtually the same. So maybe it's a deal to boost positional strength for the respective clubs. The next deal of any consequence was Edmonton Oilers shoring up their defense with the addition of Troy Stetcher. He doesn't factor in as a guy who's going to make their top four on the blue line, but really an interesting depth piece because he's got some experience. And they also picked up a seventh round pick in 2024. And I think for taking on that contract, Arizona was quite willing to make this move, and they acquire a fourth round pick in 2027 from the Oilers. Strictly a depth move in this case. Stetcher's been around the block in the NHL though, so it's a nice piece here.
Yeah, the one thing I'll add is for Edmonton, they have been mostly carrying six defensemen for a while now. So this move gives them kind of a seventh guy that they feel more confident in.
Colorado boosted their forward complement and their bottom six, a target that they had at the beginning of these trade flurries. Brandon Duhaime, who had been a top six player at times for Minnesota, has been relegated to a depth piece there more recently, and that's the role he's going to fill when he moves on to the heavyweights of this division. Minnesota instead acquires a third-round pick in 2026. Duhaime could have some surprising value in the right situation in Colorado, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think, like I said before, you know, we've got him currently in a top six role. I think that's probably temporary overall. I would expect him to move further down, but a nice addition. Be interesting to see if they resign him. He'll be a UFA after this year. So he could end up elsewhere, but you know, if he has a good postseason run, if he's able to hold off some of the challengers for a top six role, maybe they take an extended look in the offseason.
And that wasn't the only bit of work Colorado did. They added Yakov Trenin from Nashville. He's going to play a depth role on the right side of their bottom six there. And he has some upside offensively, AJ. So I wouldn't be surprised if they falter above him, that he might get a look in the top six role on the wing, which would really boost his value. They also picked up a youngster, Graham Sward, who's playing in the Western League and junior right now on the blue line, as a prospect to fill their help their prospect pool, which has been drained from previous deals. Nashville instead acquires Jeremy Hansel. He's a high-scoring defenseman in the Western Hockey League, and they also get a third-round pick from Colorado in 2025. I like the pickup of Trenin. This could have some sneaky good value.
Yeah, it's not going to wow you by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you look at the numbers, just one goal, 1 point in his last seven games. They're not huge numbers, but if you go kind of further back, look at some of his minor league production, it definitely shows a player that could get there. Had 24 points a season ago with Nashville, so you figure 30 maybe the cap. Solid depth addition.
Then the Maple Leafs make an addition from Boston University. They acquire a giant of a defenseman, AJ, and this goes hand in glove with the acquisition of Edmondson in terms of the DNA that their GM is looking for. Cade Weber stands in at 6'7", 210 pounds, a shot blocker extraordinaire, a very good defenseman on the defensive side of the puck by all accounts. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the largest sweater on the Maple Leafs roster will be on this guy's shoulders sometime in the near future, I hope. And it cost them a sixth pick in 2026 to get that move in place. I don't know if you have any insights on this college player, but what do you think about him as a possible future on the blue line here?
I think, you know, it's worth a shot. Sixth round pick, not a big deal. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Calgary Flames, a minor league deal with Dallas. They acquire Riley Demiani, and Dallas gets Emilio Pettersson, a swap of centermen. Their scoring totals are almost exactly the same, so I'm not really sure what's up here because they're similar in stature and similar in points. Maybe somebody knows something more about one of these players than the other. I wonder how that might swing the pendulum eventually, but there's nothing to split here right now. Next deal, Tampa Lightning acquiring Anthony Duclair. I really like this pickup for Tampa. They need to get young talent on this aging roster. That's going to be a concern coming down the road. He slots in a second line right winger, and they also got a seventh round pick in 2025. The Sharks, and in exchange, they acquired Jack Thompson, a defenseman in the AHL, and a third round pick in 2024. Look, Duclair has been identified as an offensively skilled player, but he hasn't really found a situation that has been a lasting one, and maybe the Lightning can be the right place for him going forward.
I mean, his numbers right now, he definitely did himself some favors heading in. He had a couple really good games before the deadline. In fact, 10 points in his last five games, five of them coming with the man advantage, so he is playing to a high level, looks to be fitting a role there in Tampa, second line with Stamkos on the other wing. And I think that gives them more offensive options other than kind of like, you know, the first line. I think the second line's a little more dangerous now. So I like Duclair in that role, allows them to keep Nick Paul centering the third line. I think they're better off with him there as well.
AJ, the next one is one that I want you to speak to at length a little bit because it involves a key player formerly with the Pittsburgh Penguins moving on to Carolina. That's Jake Guentzel, one of the signature players of the trade deadline moving along here. And Ty Smith, a guy who's played defense in the NHL for stretches. He is now toiling in the AHL. So Carolina gets two nice pieces, but Guentzel, maybe the signature piece of this whole trade deadline. And I don't like the return that they got from Carolina. And I'd like you to speak to that.
I mean, I don't have any significant issues with it. I mean, here's the fact of the matter is you're looking at a player that is going to be a free agent. He was not going to negotiate with a future team. So that's going to lower the value there. A lot of times we'll see, you know, guy gets traded and then signs like an 8-year max deal with his new club. giving up Ty Smith is nothing. That guy just hasn't been able to break into the NHL for them. I don't think it's a, major loss for them. Bunting is obviously a Kyle Dubas favorite. I think that he drafted him in juniors. He brought him to the Leafs. Now he got him here. I think they've got him up on Crosby's line. See how that works. I don't have a huge problem with that. Couple of prospects. I think what people are more focused on is that the Penguins didn't get the guys considered like Carolina's top prospects. And that's been kind of the word I've seen out there. But at the end of the day, like, you got three prospects in a pool that has none. They're just not. I like Cruz Lucius. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw I was at the game, the UW hockey game on Friday night, kind of jokingly saying I was there scouting him. But I have seen this guy play. I've got season tickets. He looks perfectly fine to me. Obviously I would have hoped for a first round pick either way, rather than the conditional second, but ultimately we need prospects. We need picks. I don't mind this deal. And as far as the postseason goes, I guess go Hurricanes, right? What? Like, hope they make the final, hope they win it, cash in some picks.
But this prospect list that Dubas acquires just goes hand in hand with what he'd done in Toronto. He doesn't go for the big player. He goes for the skill little guys. And I don't think that you got to load up on this. You have to have a bit of a mix. But Billy
Koivunen, you mean like Jake Guentzel, skilled little guys that, you know.
Yeah, well, none of these guys is going to be a Jake Guentzel. I'll stake my reputation on that one. Billy Koivunen, the Finnish league center, Vasily Ponomarev in the AHL, toiling as center. And Cruz Lucius might be the best of the lot. You better hope that he's somebody that lives up to what you've already seen to date. Maybe one of these draft picks turns into a nice chip too. But I really don't think they did well enough in this deal from my perspective. I'm not saying that Michael Bunting is going to do well for this team. He's played alongside some of the NHL's best players in first line situations, and he's going to get the chance to play with Sidney as well in Pittsburgh. So he'll do okay there. But I just think they could have got a little bit more for Guentzel, and I was disappointed by the return, but not surprised, because that's showing Kyle Dubas's DNA. And I
like Kyle Dubas.
I told you so.
That is
what
I'm
going to say.
The problem. I have no problem with this deal. No issues with it.
We'll see. We're going to duke it out during a break. Now we're going to pause. You're listening to the podcast with Statsman and AJ, and I'm going to give AJ a few barbs while we're taking this break. So we'll be back right after these messages to continue with our look at the trade deadline that just came and went. And then we'll dive into our DFS portion of our show, as well as maybe a few injury notes. You're listening to podcast with Statsman and AJ. Back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Right after this. All right, you're listening to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. We're back to review some of more trades that happened in the past week at the trade deadline, showing you where these players fit on the new rosters and the implications to the teams that let them go. We pick up where we left off. Carolina Hurricanes acquiring Evgeny Kuznetsov, Washington Capitals acquiring a third-round pick in 2025 and retaining 50% of Kuznetsov's contract. This is a guy whose performance has fallen off a cliff, AJ, but maybe he's going to be reinvigorated with a chance to play top 6 minutes in Carolina. I think it's a bit of a lottery ticket, but if he performs like he has in the earlier part of his career, this could be a real bonus for Carolina.
I agree. It's a high-risk, potentially high-reward move. He's certainly not cheap, even with that retained salary, but they've got him under contract for next year as well. So it's a two playoff run move. So we'll see. We'll see if it pans out. I think he's got something to prove after having to enter the player assistance program and then going on waivers. So I think it's a motivated Kuznetsov, and he could do worse than having Jake Guentzel playing on his wing. That's for sure.
AJ, up next, the Winnipeg Jets acquire Tyler Toffoli. This is a guy who's played for now 4 different Canadian teams among the 7. Maybe that's his goal, to try and get to every one of the teams north of the border. But a solid offensive addition to a team that's up near the top of the Western Conference, and joining that arms race was a key development for them to keep pace. And the Devils acquire a third-round pick in 2024 and a second-rounder in 2025 for retaining 50% of Toffoli's contract. I really like this move for the Jets.
Yeah, I agree. The back and forth, is Toffoli available? Is he not? The fact, you know, a lot of people were saying this was a good deal for the Jets, and then it came out that the retained salary part, that kind of came later, and I think everybody thought it was an even better deal for the Jets when you factor that in. A good addition here. You know, they've got him playing with Sean Monahan right now, and that's with Gabe Vilardi out of the lineup. So a top 6 role for Toffoli. But they have some options. They can move him to the top line, slide Nikolai Ehlers back. So a good pickup and definitely bolstering their top 6.
Up next, we saw the Bruins acquire Pat Maroon, a physical force who's bounced around the league, but he's had some success in terms of winning Stanley Cups with teams over the last few years. So a bit of a good luck charm, the Bruins hope there. And Minnesota Wild acquire a conditional 6th-round pick. This trade was brought about by the 2 games that the Bruins played against the Leafs. For once, the Leafs pushed the Bruins around a little bit, despite losing both games. In the second one, they won 2 lopsided fights in that one. And I don't think that sat well with the Bees, and was a key in terms of pulling the trigger on this deal to bring in Maroon, who is quite accomplished in the physical arts of the game.
Yeah, again, another, you know, flyer on a guy that, you know, it doesn't hurt you if it doesn't really work out. They didn't give up a ton for it. Minnesota gets a late round pick and a prospect. I mean, I think really this was just about doing right by Pat Maroon and letting him have another shot at a playoff run.
AJ, after this, there were a bunch of more minor trades. We're going to touch on a few of them, though. Kyle Okposo, Buffalo Sabres captain, goes over to Florida, shoring up their bottom 6 and bringing leadership to that locker room. A very nice pickup, a solid citizen in Okposo, with now a chance to go far in the playoffs instead of missing the playoffs yet again. The Sabres acquire Kalle Schjalin and a conditional 7th-round pick for this nice addition to the Panthers lineup.
Yeah, I think, again, another, you know, you're trading away the captain of your team with Buffalo there. They're trying to do what's right for him. And again, low cost addition for the Panthers, for a guy that could get a you know, some power play opportunities with them. Their second unit doesn't have a ton of depth in terms of who could be out there, at least before the trade. Now you're looking at Okposo, who's got experience playing with Tarasenko, who they also brought in, and Sam Bennett. It completely revamps that second power play unit for them.
Then a couple of trades involving players that you're familiar with, so I'll get you to give a thumbnail to what the Rangers get in Chad Ruedel, the Penguins acquiring a fourth-round pick, and then Nashville acquiring Jason Zucker from Arizona, that they get a sixth-round pick. So what are the Rangers and the Preds getting in Ruedel and Zucker, respectively?
Well, the Rangers are getting a Stanley Cup champion, a guy that was part of the 16 and 17 team. So is he going to see the ice much with the Rangers? I don't think so. He'll probably be third there. You know, maybe slides in every once in a while for Zach Jones or give somebody a night off. But it's a nice thing to have when you've got Jacob Trouba dealing with an injury that's going to sideline him for at least another week and a half or so. So I like that addition there. In terms of Jason Zucker, again, the Predators weren't really supposed to be in the playoffs. All they have to give up is a sixth-round pick for a guy that they're going to put in a top-six role. They're basically going to put Zucker and Bolivier on the same line and hope they can help each other out. Zucker is one of the streakiest players I've ever seen. He's got just 3 points in his last 12 games, but then he'll go on a stretch where he'll be a point-per-game player for a while. So they're going to see what they got, and they didn't give up really anything to do it.
And then the next one on the surface looks like a bit of a head-scratcher when you consider Jake Allen. Montreal acquiring a conditional third-round pick in 2025 for retaining 50% of Allen's contract, which goes into next year. The Devils acquiring him for that price, and he goes from one three-goalie situation into another one. But I think he's got the inside lane on maybe getting the top job here as a placeholder while they get the rest of their goaltending depth sorted out in New Jersey, whereas in Montreal, it's pretty clear that the Canadiens were going to lean on two other youngsters going forward. And so it was time to cut ties for the guy who was, by all accounts, a very good leader in the locker room and a really good mentor to the young Canadiens goalies that he leaves behind.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was an interesting day for the Devils. We'll talk about Kaapo Kähkönen a little bit later. So the fact that they just completely revamped, they brought in two new guys. But I agree. Looking at it right now, I think Allen has the inside track. Whether it stays that way remains to be seen.
AJ, then the Flyers acquire a former Stanley Cup champion from the Buffalo Sabres and Eric Johnson to shore up their defense. He's getting a little long in the tooth, though, and I don't know where he fits in on the Flyers' blue line. More of a really depth piece here for a team that might not be in the playoffs for too long if they make it this year. So a bit of a head-scratcher there. The Sabres acquiring fourth-round pick for that exchange. And another one where a guy has fallen off the cliff in terms of his prospect capital, that I thought Denis Gurianov was going to be a real star in this league, AJ, but kind of floundered in Dallas and moved around to Nashville. Things really not going his way, but he gets another chance to revamp his career in Philadelphia, and all it cost the Predators was Wade Allison, another guy who's bounced up and down in the NHL. Do you expect much from Gurianov in this circumstance? I certainly don't.
No, I don't expect a ton. They'll give him a look and figure out what they have in him, but it seems like he's going to play tonight, but I would expect he'll be in, he'll be out. You know, he's kind of shuffling around with like Nick Delorier and Cam Atkinson right now for bottom 4 minutes. So I don't expect him to have a significant impact here.
The next deal was born out of a situation where the Bruins lost a depth piece to their blue line for the balance of the season. Derek Forbert has a couple of major injuries that he's dealing with, and he'll be lost to the team. So they went looking for help, and they got Andrew Peak out of Columbus, a guy who's played as high as second pairing minutes there. And the Jackets acquired Jacob Zboril, a prospect in the Boston depth chart who has had a couple of cups of coffee in the NHL, but Peak, more of a defensive defenseman to bolster that bottom part of the order in Boston. I think it's a good move for them, AJ. I'll jump to the next deal because I want to hear your opinion on Matt Dumba, a guy whose name was really heavily rumored to be on the move, and he did go to Tampa eventually, along with a seventh-round pick in 2025. The Coyotes acquiring a fifth-rounder in 2027, so really not a lot of value attached to Dumba in this deal, but he could be a surprisingly key component to the Tampa offense from the back end, and depth and experience too that he brings to the table. So not a bad move for the Lightning, I'll say, in this circumstance.
Totally agree with that assessment there, Paul. I think low cost addition. Dumba has some offensive upside if needed. It's not necessarily the biggest part of his game these days, just 10 points in 58 games for Arizona. But, you know, he's hit 20 multiple times. He had a 50-point season once in Montreal. I think he's probably more of a 25 to 30-point producer. So a nice addition to, you know, a already very solid group. I mean, you've got Calvin DeHaan basically sitting on the bench here. And then, you know, a chance, a very small chance that Mikhail Sergachev could return if they make a very deep run. So it feels like kind of a short kind of addition here.
And the next move is a really nice bit of business by the New York Rangers, I think, AJ. They acquired Jack Roslovic, who was first line center in Columbus for a lot of his time there. But he's ticketed for right wing on the top line. We mentioned the depth that the Rangers have in their middle of the ice. So Roslovic tasked with filling in on the right wing. And he's got an offensive skill set that should mesh very well here. It costs the Rangers a conditional fourth round pick in 2026. It becomes a third rounder if they make the Stanley Cup final. That's a cheap value for a guy who has the offensive chops that Roslovic brings to the table.
Yeah, I think that, as I said earlier, I think that's kind of the bigger potential addition because it allows Roslovic moves to the top line right now with Zibanejad and Kreider. Kako can drop back to the third line with Wennberg. Obviously, you've got Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere as, you know, 1B, really. I wouldn't necessarily call that a second line. So this is a really strong, strong group. Roslovic, essentially, not that he can produce at quite the same level, but essentially provides a replacement for Blake Wheeler, who's going to be, you know, again, maybe could return in the postseason with a deep run. But I like the overall addition. I like their top nine, their first three lines here, way better when you have Roslovic in there. And I think he has a chance to have more of an impact on this team than Alex Wennberg.
Then the last really big deal of the day, and there we'll touch on a couple of smaller ones in a minute, but Thomas Hertl is acquired by Vegas. And again, we don't know how they're shoehorning all these guys into their lineup when they're all healthy, but a great addition and a significant cap retention going on here. In his case, the Sharks acquire David Edstrom, a prospect, a first round pick in 2025, a third rounder in 2025, and a third rounder in 2027 for retaining 17%, of Hertl's contract, which will go on for a number of years. So that's quite a commitment by San Jose to take a big piece of his deal off the hands of Vegas, but they get a really nice piece in Thomas Hertl to join what looks like a really stacked offense.
Yeah, I mean, bringing in Hertl is huge. You know, I think I want to clarify because there was some confusion around this early on. The Golden Knights actually get those third round picks and Tomas Hertl in exchange for Edstrom and the first rounder. So I think that makes this deal way better for Vegas they got some third round picks pretty far into the future in one case. But the original way it was worded, it seemed like the Sharks were getting both the third rounders, the first round, and Edstrom, which seemed like a reasonable price to pay for Tomas Hertl. Now, when you get those third round picks back, it becomes an even better deal for Vegas. Hertl is not supposed to be out until the playoffs. So at some point, they're going to have to do some cap gymnastics here to get Hertl activated here. I don't know what that's going to be. I'm interested to watch how that shakes out because he is expected back before the postseason.
The Maple Leafs acquired Connor Dewar, a guy who's got 10 goals to his name already this season, and he's ticketed for a bottom six role, so it's nice to have some scoring punch down there. And he's been a primary penalty killer with Minnesota all season long. Now, they're not one of the top penalty killing units, but he certainly has good numbers in that in that role on the season, and will hopefully bolster the Leafs in the PK. And it cost them a fourth-round pick in 2026. And Dmitry Ovchinnikov, who is an interesting prospect because he's got a scoring eye that he's shown in the minors, and maybe that's what Minnesota is hoping to get out of this deal, is another sneaky good depth piece for their offense in Ovchinnikov.
Yeah, I don't think we need to necessarily break that one down too much more, Paul. I think you've got a handle on that one.
let's do one more then, AG, to close this off. The acquisition swap of goalies here. San Jose acquiring Vitek Vanecek and a seventh-round pick in 2025. The Devils get Kaapo Kähkönen. His stock has fallen in the last few years. Maybe it was because he stuck around with a pretty bad team. He gets a chance to revitalize his career, and I think he'll show better in a better circumstance with a healthier New Jersey Devils lineup the balance of this season and certainly going into next year. And the news that Dougie Hamilton might even show up on the radar for the Devils might give them a better chance to gauge Kähkönen. But Vitek Vanecek, who is a guy who had a chance to take the Devils job and run with it, instead he's been run out of town.
Yeah, I mean, for Kähkönen, it can't get much worse. Just 6 wins in 31 games, a 3.82 goals against average. Like, the numbers are bad. They are what they are. But he got his first game in for the Devils because Jake Allen is still working out visa concerns. It was a loss, but he only gave up 2 goals on 25 shots. I think that's probably what you could most likely expect from him on a night-to-night basis. Like, 2-3 goals allowed, somewhere in that range. Would be ideal, and then you hope your offense can pick it up from there. Vitek Vanecek going the other way, still dealing with an injury. So he's not expected back before the season is over. So that obviously factored into the decision. The Devils needed another goalie, or felt they needed another goalie, and it wasn't going to be Vitek Vanecek this season, so they traded him away to get a healthy netminder.
And AJ, it's an interesting segue to talk about more injury news. We'll skip the hot players because of time constraints. We'll jump into the injury news of the week and before we close out with the DFS. So in terms of injury news, there's coming and going significant in both directions in Boston. I mentioned that Derek Forbert's lost for the season, but they get good news in Hampus Lindholm returning to the lineup after missing 9 games with a lower body injury. That's going to help the Bees significantly.
Yeah, absolutely. A great, a tough loss there, but able to kind of balance it out. In terms of kind of bigger injury news, I think we need to talk about Thatcher Demko going to be out. I've seen 2 to 3 or 2 to 4 weeks. So that's a significant blow for both for him. If you look at odds, you'll see that it's pretty solid in Hellebuyck being the favorite for the Vezina Trophy, but Demko probably the one who most likely could have challenged him. And they're going to have to rely on Casey DeSmith the rest of the way here. They are it's not the best situation to be in, especially for a playoff contender here. At least they'll have him back for the postseason, have some time to get him back fully healthy, but definitely one of the more impactful injuries we heard about yesterday.
And we know that in Pittsburgh, Gensel has been dealing with an upper body hurt, but he's been finally cleared for contact. And Carolina's going to get a chance to see how good this guy can be for their lineup in the very near future. So that's something we're looking forward to. As I said, maybe the biggest name, one of the biggest impact guys that was traded at the deadline, looks healthy and ready to go for the Hurricanes. Detroit is stumbling a little bit, and it's no wonder. They're without their leader, Dylan Larkin, their captain, missed the last 3 games with a lower body injury. It's going to keep him out for another week or two, and it couldn't happen at a worse time for the Wings as they're trying to keep pace with Tampa for one of the 2 wild card spots, and there's a couple of teams in the Metro Division nipping at their heels too. So a complicated situation made worse for the Red Wings with the loss of their captain.
I'll just add to follow up on what you said, Paul, not a firm confirmation, but pretty much that Jake Gensel is going to play tonight. Of course, coaches won't come out and just say a guy is going to play. It's he looks like he's about ready to maybe think about possibly playing tonight. And that's about what we got from Rod Brind'Amour. But all signs point to Gensel being in the lineup tonight, playing a second line role for Carolina. with Evgeny Kuznetsov in the middle and Martin Nekas on the other wing there.
And then we got a trio of defensemen, experienced defensemen here that will be out of their respective lineups. Aaron Ekblad with Florida, maybe the most significant injury. He's out at least 2 weeks with a left knee injury, and that's coming at a time where they're battling the Bruins for first place in the Atlantic and the right to avoid the Maple Leafs in the first round. So that's a carrot that's out there for one of both of these teams. Jacob Trouba with the Rangers, similarly out for 2 to 3 weeks for the Rangers blue line. That's something that they'll miss big time because he's had such an impact. He's the captain of this team. And then finally, Nick Seeler of the Philadelphia Flyers out with a lower body injury week to week, joining three other defensemen on the Flyer blue line who are in the infirmary right now. So something they can ill afford at this stage of the season as they too are competing for their playoff lives.
Well, unless you have anybody else you want to touch on, Paul, there, I think we could jump into the DFS. Give you a second to let me know if there's any other injury news you want to touch on. Or...
Well, just closer to home here in Toronto, Mitch Marner's been dealing with a lower body.
Oh,
hurt.
Yeah, I forgot about the Leafs. I try not to think about the Leafs.
I hear that from them. And, I mean, he missed their last game. They had a four-day break before their next one on Thursday this week. So they're trying to get him healthy and back on the beam. They're missing him from the offense. You could see the power play struggling without him, and I hope that he can be back in the lineup at least on Saturday when they face Carolina in what should be a pretty entertaining hockey game. And let's take a look at the DFS portion of our show as we build out our lineups for the 10-game slate that's on tap tonight. I'm curious to know what you did with your roster. I have an interesting slant with mine that I'm looking forward to sharing.
Yeah, so kind of all over the place a little bit. No real consistency, which is unusual for me. I tend to be a little more succinct in what teams I go with and kind of stack, but not the case tonight. So I start at the center position. I went to Montreal because they're at home playing Columbus. Always a good opportunity to take advantage of that. I'm going to use Nick Suzuki for 6,200. Pretty good form of late, 8 points in his last 7 games, including 5 goals. So I'd expect Columbus a good opportunity for anybody to add to their goal total. I'm going to continue to hit on matchups here. I'm going to go with Sean Couturier for the Flyers. They're at home facing San Jose. He comes in at just 4,500. High risk, high reward, obviously, given that price tag. He's goalless in 12 straight. Shot totals haven't been quite what you would hope, but the fact of the matter is the Flyers are playing at home against San Jose, and he costs less than $5,000, so I think it's worth the risk there. I don't need to touch on this too much. I'm going to use Jake Guentzel tonight, $7,500. Obviously, I need confirmation that he'll play. Otherwise, I'll adjust the lineup, but all signs point to that, so I really like him for that assignment. I'm going to go Matt Zuccarello from Minnesota. At home, 5,600. They're playing against the Arizona Coyotes. He'll get some help back with Marcus Johansson, rather, is returning to the lineup. Zuccarello, for his part, another guy, 7-game pointless streak, but 15 shots over that stretch and 8 helpers. So he's still finding a way to produce even without necessarily being in goal. I'm going to go with Boris Kachuk. From Ottawa, formerly of Pittsburgh. Of Chicago. He was claimed off waivers by the Senators. Comes in at just 2,600 tonight. Not a lot of offensive upside here. This is definitely a throwaway, but Penguins have been leaking goals lately. And so Ottawa maybe could do something tonight, get some production in there, and a low-cost punt option with a decent matchup. For defense, I'm going to go with Adam Fox. I think that play pretty much speaks for itself. 5,800 is his price tag, so he's not a huge expense. He produces assists, puts some shots on goal, and a lot of times those assists come with the man advantage here. Bowen Byram for Buffalo, going to be my other one. Paul, you mentioned Detroit's been struggling. Buffalo's at home tonight. 3,400 is the price tag for Byram. Again, a low-cost guy with some offensive upside, had a goal and an assist in his first game with the Sabres. Didn't get any points in his second game, but four shots on that one. So a good low-cost defenseman there. Utility, going to spend up a little bit more there. Going to go with Rupe Hintz for Dallas. This is kind of the one maybe like, you know, matchup side that not necessarily having the best of it as they play Florida, but you've got your first line center for Dallas, 3 goals, 3 assists in his last 5 games, tons of shots, 16 shots on net over that 5-game stretch. So good addition there. Between the pipes, I'm basically just going to go with the Vegas netminder tonight. They're on the road against Seattle. I've got Aiden Hill in there now, who we are projected to go with, but Logan Thompson could also be in the mix. I think they'll have plenty of offensive support here. Should be able to pull out a win. And just $7,900, you're not paying the top of the price range here. So that's what I did over on DraftKings. Paul, what do you think about FanDuel's lineup tonight?
Well, it's interesting. We don't compare notes in terms of who we pick, AJ, and we only had one guy in common, but our thinking was very similar in that I, too, went for a contrarian buildup in my roster and a lot of players that I haven't mentioned for much of the season, quite frankly, but players who are in good situations tonight in a bit of a roster that's contrarian to what the popular picks might be on tonight's slate. I began with Connor Bedard, who's been on a bit of a tear of late with 5 points in his last 3 games. He's going up against Anaheim, and he, of course, gets lots of minutes as their first-line center and power play guy at the linchpin in that position. $7,200 the price tag there for a guy who's going well right now and is running away with the Rookie of the Year honors, I think. The guy that we picked in common, Nick Suzuki in Montreal, for me, the price tag was a little higher. You had $6,200 on DK. I had $7,300 on FanDuel. He heads into the game against Columbus on a tear, 8 points in his last 7 games played. He's also a guy who is central to their power play, which could have a field day tonight at home against the Jackets. We talked about Vladimir Tarasenko earlier on the show, the addition that he is in the Florida roster, playing primetime minutes on the first line for only $5,600. I think he has a chance to make a splashy debut. He's already done well in that regard and hopes to continue it against the Dallas team that's at home tonight. Detroit's in tough because they're without their captain, so they're leaning on Alex DeBrincat to carry their offense. He comes in at $6,500, but he's facing the Sabres club that's really reeling in the second half of the season, falling out way out of the playoff picture, and Detroit is trying to stay afloat, so I think he'll be motivated in this good circumstance. Then I took a pair of Florida defensemen. We mentioned the one that's hurt, so that means more ice time for Forsling and Montour with Ekblad being out. So for $5,100, I got Forsling. For $5,400, I got Montour. They're central to the offense that Florida generates on a nightly basis, and I'm looking for them to win a slugfest against Dallas in Dallas. Forsling, for his part, could be a real good value based on the fact that he's coming in with 6 points in his last 4 games played. And I go to a contrarian play within the matchup between Calgary and Colorado, AJ, because I like the way that Igor Sharangovich is going, playing top line minutes with Calgary. He's on their power play as well, and he's producing at a very nice rate with 11 points in his last 9 starts. I'm hoping that he can continue that against a very good Colorado club for $5,700. Then I add Johnny Gaudreau on the other side of that matchup in Montreal. He's playing in Canada again, and he is a guy who's done well earlier in his career in Calgary and against Canadian teams. And winger on the first line, power play unit on the first line. The scoring totals are not going to be 100 points on the season, but still a key cog in the Columbus offense, such as it is. And then in the nets, I look for Chicago to triumph in Anaheim, and that means I'm taking the Hawks goalie, who at the moment looks like it could be Peter Mrazek, but regardless of who it is, I like the Hawks tonight versus the Ducks at home. So that's our look at the DFS portion of the show. AJ, in terms of the things that we want to focus on the rest of the season, we're looking at who's playing where on the different rosters. We tried to highlight that throughout the show in terms of the new additions. I'm curious to know if you can share concisely what goes into the process of updating the NHL depth charts on RotoWire's website. It's important to get as best information as possible as we approach the regular season fantasy playoffs and in preparation for NHL playoff pools. Just how do we go about getting the best information in terms of creating up to the minute accuracy in our depth charts?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing for listeners and people that use the site is to go to the depth chart page, and you can see each team. We also have power play depth charts on there as well. Those are basically updated based on reports coming out of morning skates of where guys are in, you know, in terms of the power play, when they do power play drills during the morning skate, when they do line rushes. That's when we update it after the morning skate. And then again, when those lines are, when they do line rushes before the game, during warmups, there's always line rushes. Now, obviously we can't, they don't do power play work before the game, but we get that mostly for morning skate. After the game, we'll make some adjustments as well based on time on ice. But then we also do the warm-up. So it's a lot of just compiling information that's available and out there. So we're doing the work for you by grabbing those. Obviously, I think most people know how to use Twitter or X or whatever the heck it's called these days. You could go scour that yourself, but all that information is compiled in one place for you at rotowire.com. If you haven't before, want to check out the site, we recommend rotowire.com/pod. That's rotowire.com/pod. That'll give you a 48-hour free trial of the site. You can check out those depth charts. You can check out the starting goalie grid where we're confirming guys throughout the day as that information comes out and letting you know who's going to be between the pipes as well.
So thanks for that, AJ. I think it's really worth hammering that point because for the balance of this season, we're talking about RotoWire, the fantasy hockey playoffs, rather, and the upcoming NHL playoffs to get ready for your playoff pools. And there's no better way than to get a real good handle on who's playing with who and who's playing where. And the best place we go to find that information is the RotoWire depth charts page. So that should be something you bookmark if you haven't already for the balance of this season. And it's a great way for us to close out our look at the trade deadline. And we'll remind you that we'll be back in a week to talk about who's hot and who's not and who's hurt for the balance of the season. We urge you to come back to listen to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman AJ Nguyen. Thank you for listening. As always, we remind you that we're here for all your needs in fantasy hockey world. So we encourage you to send your comments or questions on Twitter or X, where you can follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJ Scholes24. So long, everybody. Have a great day.